This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 6, DIY Coaching Kit. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we get into some kit hacks. What are the best ways to do DIY changes and upgrades to coaching equipment? Find out what the team do on this week's show. Plus, we answer your questions. One about catching in the deep when you're finding it hard to judge. And another about a spinner who's changed his run-up and what that influence can have on your game. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This, of course, as you know by now, is your guide to better cricket, whether that's coaching it or playing it, doesn't matter. Half an hour or so of talking about those topics. Questions, answers, and a little bit of fun along the way. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things. And helping me to help you are two cricket coaches with very fine pedigrees, the first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth.
Hello. You all right?
Very good, thanks. Yeah, half-term fun, good. As always. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, nice bit of time with the family, and then I'm flying off to Spain later to be part of the Tom Maynard Academy alongside Tom's dad, Matt Maynard, and we've got Paul Nixon there, Dean Conway, the old England physio. I shouldn't call him old, but he is, and Neil. Neil Harvey. Isn't that brilliant, Ian Harvey? If Neil makes pops in and does a bit of a thing, that would be fantastic as well. But looking forward to spending some time with Ian out there as well. Learned a lot from him last year, so hopefully going to learn a bit more this year.
Yeah, dropping a few names there, Gareth.
Ian Botham's house is on the golf course that we're playing, as is Daley Thompson's and Steve Redgrave. So there's a few more for you there, mate.
I always get the feeling that you're always within, 15 miles of one of Ian Botham's houses. Surely.
Exactly. I think we all are.
Exactly. Secondly on the call, it is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School, Sam Lavery. Hiya, Lavers. Any names to drop today?
Well, I'm not going to rival Botham and Daly, am I?
No, you're in trouble already, aren't you?
Yeah.
Just leave it.
I can't. There's no point going past Daly Thompson.
Well, not many did.
There weren't many that did, mate. Even Jürgen Hingson didn't manage it.
He'll still have his tracksuit on there.
He will. Adidas every single time, mate.
Yeah, loving it. Let's get on to cricketing topics. I wanted to talk about a bit of DIY stuff this week. And I'm not talking about putting up a shelf. I'm talking about coaching gear. What kind of do-it-yourself things have you done or have you seen that coaches and players have done to change the standard bit of kit? This started for me when I saw a video in the week of someone putting some tape onto a sidearm to try and get it to go a little bit faster, which seemed very sensible to me. I've never done it myself, but it looked quite interesting. So, I guess we could start with that one. Have you ever taped up a sidearm to make it go a bit faster? And what other things have you done?
I haven't, because I wouldn't like to see what the result would be. I spend a lot of time on a sidearm and it goes all right. But I know of people who have, and I know of some people with some already scary arms that have taped up sidearms, and it does have the desired effect, much to the dismay of the people that are 20 yards away at the other end. So it does do. I think it's important to get the right tape on it. And generally, the guys in the pro game go to their physios and get some of their really good tape that they use on bodies normally and wind it around them. And it can improve velocity. So if you want to have a sidearm that does that, then that's a really easy method by which to do it. Certainly Dan Hellesfair at our school has got that, and he still farts it out at about 50 miles an hour. But it's high 50s as opposed to low 50s now, which is good.
I've actually done that. I've got a sidearm that's been taped up, one with and one without, and it does make a bit of a difference. Pete, there are a couple of different ways people can tape it though. So some people go for the tape all around the shaft of it, if you can imagine, all the way up from the handle all the way up to where the ball goes in at the top, and then some people tape up around the casing, the hand bit that holds the ball effectively. Which squeezes it a little bit tighter. And that's, again, which part of it is making the biggest difference, I'm not sure. The one thing I do know, though, is when you tape around that bit that holds the ball in, that definitely leads to a little bit of an adjustment to be required. And you do have to kind of try and bowl beamers, in effect. Otherwise, you end up hitting yourself in the toes.
Yeah, it sticks a bit more, so you have to sort of get it.
Absolutely,
get that release point correct. And that takes a bit of getting used to anyway, doesn't it? I mean, if you knew to side on completely, you're putting them down at your feet and then sending them into the side netting and all that. You know, everyone starts by that, don't they?
So, we've all been there, haven't we?
Yeah. And, there is a side on which has been designed to go faster, isn't there? It's a bit sort of, the plastic's a bit thicker and the claw is a bit stronger. So I guess the people at sidearm are thinking along those lines as well.
Yeah, they're using a different plastic, aren't they, to get a similar result as tape's doing, which is making it more rigid, I assume. Yeah. And it's a good idea by themselves. I think just get used to throwing with a sidearm is a great thing. And if you want to tape it up and you've got a new one and you've never used it before, you're probably best off taping it up straight away, because then you don't have to make that double adjustment that Sam talks about. But they're great bits of kit, and definitely something that is part of any good coaching bag, that is for sure. The other ones that we've talked about regularly is like the catch-it boards. Now, I don't doctor the catch-it boards too much, but I doctor what goes around it. So, for example, you can build a little wooden frame which has got some a material hanging down from it like a curtain, and then what you're doing is you're throwing the ball under the curtain, but of course the fielder over the other side loses sight of the ball for a little bit as well. So it's that occluded vision type overtraining response where they see the ball being released to start off with, then lose it as it goes in towards the ramp and then appears out through the ramp. That's a really nice bit of overtraining. You're not going to get that in a match, obviously, but it's a really good bit of overtraining. Actually, you may get it in a match if you're playing on some grounds where you don't quite track a slip catch all the way, but it will teach you to relax the body and have some experience of having a ball that you lose in flight and then still being able to catch it. So I suppose it is functional as well as being an overtraining thing.
Yeah, because you do lose the ball, don't you? And those are the ones, those are the catches where you feel best about them, don't you? Because you lose it and then you still manage to get hold of it. And you think, oh, I was lucky there. But if you've practiced it, then, you know, that luck, you're more likely to be lucky. It's the old adage, isn't it? You know, the more the practice,
correct,
the luckier you get. Yeah. So,
how is that to put together? Is that one for the tech department down at Millfield?
Yeah, I actually did it myself,
anybody
who knows me knows that that's a really easy thing to do. So I just put together a basic frame with some wood and nailed in some old curtain, mate. There you go. That's
job done.
Job done. Is there a little string
that opens the curtains if you want to just move them out the way?
Can you imagine it? I've got it on a remote. I've got it on remote as well, so I can just, for an encore at the end.
What about you, Lavers? Have you had any challenges where you've come up with something where you think, actually, I would like to be able to do this with this piece of kit, and I can't do it as it stands, but I've made a change, and it's...
Well, one of the ones we've done with the bowling machine, which is quite simple again, is you can just protect yourself a little bit. I think these days with bowling machines and boys hitting the ball back at such speed, it gets pretty dangerous. And if you don't have one of the frames that you can effectively stand on and provide your own shield for you.
You just have legs,
you can make
don't
your
you?
Own one up pretty yeah. easily. Right. And simple, just a bit of material of any choice. So you can go for like a debris netting type thing's pretty good if you know what that is. And just wrap that around the three legs and you can stand in behind. That's a pretty good way just to protect yourself. And you can use that outside in the wind as well, because the air just goes straight through it, and that gives you a little bit of protection when you're serving up half volleys.
Oh yeah, because I've started to think now some of my players are starting to hit the ball back pretty straight, and we've only got one of those three-legged bowling machines, and I've occasionally started to think to myself, do I need to stick on some pads and a helmet here just to be on the safe side? It's getting to that point, definitely.
Oh, definitely. You know, we've seen that happen over quite a short period of time, really, isn't it? You know, without any coaching as such, people are just seeing the game change and wanting to hit the ball harder. And, we're lucky at school. We've got all of those stands and stuff, which are great. But if somebody hits an X set back over your head, it can hit a one of the poles and then come back at you, which we've experienced a couple of times as well. So you're never totally covered, I suppose. But the more you can put yourself at ease, I suppose, the better, because there's nothing worse than somebody running down the track and drilling the ball straight back at you when you're concentrating on putting it in a very small hole so they can get a practice. It's not really on you. I used to go through a stage of having the baseball mitt on and just try and catch whatever I could do, now, you know, we're lucky enough to have those stands and what have you, and if you can afford them, then I would highly recommend them.
Yeah, or if you're of a DIY bent, then yeah, maybe you can make something up yourself.
Slightly more complex than the one that I mentioned earlier, has to be said.
No drawstring, though. That's
no drawstring.
Yeah. So what else? We got anything else which is?
I got a goodie. This is a Duncan Fletcherism. This, anytime any bat broke, he would either make sure that he took the edges off of it and turned it into a middling bat, or he would take the edges off of it and then get some flat rubber from a DIY store and use it as a nicking bat for the keepers standing up. So I used to, one of my roles with Fletch was to bat against people like Monty and Swanee and various others and try and edge as many or flick the rubber of this bat to get it through to the keepers that were standing behind me. Fantastic training aid, which costs absolutely nothing because bats break all the time, so get the edges cut down. And then I used to bat against Monty. So if Monty bowled me an absolute filthy delivery, I was still allowed to whack it, which was just brilliant fun as well. So, and of course, if I tried to whack it and then edged it, then I could say I was given Geraint or Chris Reid or Paul Nixon some practice, which obviously I wasn't, but I can say that. Yeah, it's a win-win.
Just filling my roles, fellas. Yeah, well, I mentioned it before in previous episodes, but yeah, I've found that using a mongoose, using an old mongoose has been a fantastic way of doing nicking practice as well.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. So it's quality. There's not even an adaptation there. It's just someone had one lying around, so we decided to try it and it worked.
Well, it is an adaptation, isn't it? Because it's an adaptation of its original intention. So, you know, you still got to have an innovative brain for that, David, which you have.
I guess one that's a bit similar is the use of the fusion stumps. You can use them as a nicking tool as well. So we use use them with the keepers quite a lot, or just put them out there outside off stump and the bowler can go through and the keeper ups the stumps. You have your normal stumps in the normal position, then a couple of stumps lurking outside off stump or one down the leg side just for the keeper to work against, and just creates a little nick through as well. So there's a pretty good use for them, but one that's dead easy to employ.
Nice. Okay. All right. That's plenty. Let's leave it there. There's probably 100 more, but if people listening and thinking, you know, either that they've come up with something creative and they want to share it, or they've got a problem and they feel like there's a solution close, but they're not quite sure what it is, then send a question in and we'll see what we can do to make some adaptations to the equipment that you've got to get where you want to be. And I find that one of the most fun areas is that you have a piece of equipment and you have a problem and you go, how can I adapt this to solve the problem that I've got? That's one of the most fun challenges in coaching for me. That I love that. Well, let's finish up this section with the yes no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question: the only way to play your natural game is to know your natural game.
Yes.
No.
Second question: poor footwork is rarely the cause of batting issues.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question: good length changes under different pitch conditions.
Yes.
Yes.
Now it's time for questions that have been sent in by the listeners to the show, or perhaps people who read the Pitch Vision Academy website. Either way, those questions get answered by us, and then we decide on the best question of the week, which wins the prize of an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and there's other ways to get in touch with us, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. The first question is from an old friend. We haven't heard from him for a while, but he's come up with what I think is quite a decent question here. It's Wolf, and Wolf says, "Greetings, Pitch Visioneers." That's my favourite name for us. "I always find myself feeling in the deep, yet I struggle to catch balls hit high in the air and directly towards me. I often find them more difficult to judge the ones for which I need to move sideways. Do you think it's better to run straight to where I think the ball will go and then have to change my position quite late, or use the flight of the ball to time a more curving run and adjust my approach gradually to finish up coming in rather than going out? Are there individual differences which might govern one's choice? For instance, would a right-handed thrower who prefers to time their run be better positioned a bit to the left of the ball? And how might the dominant eye or visual field bias, to which you often refer to in batting, play into this?
Easy for you to say, Dave.
Yeah, struggled over that one. But I think we know what he's getting at. What's the best way to catch a ball, a high ball, when it's coming straight at you?
Well, I think there's different options, and he's given us a few different options there, hasn't he? And almost, I would say, we'll work through the questions that you've given us a little bit. So is it better to race straight on or to use the flight of the ball for a more curving run? Well, have a go at both. And I think, you know, if you've got a bowling machine head and you happen to have it on legs that you can point up in the air, then give that a go. Ping some balls up into a fairly consistent area and try both of those approaches, because some people do like to come straight into the ball and other people do like to have a curve. It relates a little bit to motor eye, but also to that dominant shoulder that we talked about the other day when we were relating that to batting and bowling. So you'll find your own way. I can't give you your own way because I haven't seen enough of you to be able to give you that. But I think a lot of your questions that you've asked there are worth exploring from an individual perspective for us all, really. I for one, was happier when the ball was to my right-hand side catching, and I could open my shoulders up and allow the ball to come across me and let my left eye track it. So I was always very confident. When the ball went up in the air, I would try to catch it to my right-hand side as much as I possibly can by curving my run to meet the ball in the position that I felt most comfortable. Now, obviously, and in this day of hard hit, flatter catches on the boundary that are coming straight at you, you don't always have that opportunity to move your feet, and you do need to be able to cope with a number of different angles and speeds of ball coming at you on the boundary. But my preference, I definitely knew if the ball went up in the air, whether I was keeping or whether I was out on the boundary, then I'd like to receive it coming across my body a little bit like, but not as extreme as the catch that Ben Stokes took the other day on the boundary. And whilst it looked a bit fluky and it looked a bit instinctive and everything, but his preference is to catch the ball on that side of his body by letting it come across him a little bit. So it fell into his preference as well as it looking fantastic and actually changing the game, which is what it did. So yeah, experiment with it. One thing that we do know is that people that have a tendency to lead with their head when they're batting and lead with their head into a catch would like to have the ball in front of them rather than going over the top of their head a little bit. So they'd be happier sort of standing off of the catch and then maybe even diving into a catch. If you can picture somebody like a Jimmy Anderson, very happy to dive into a catch and go forward towards a catch, whereas some people would prefer to be right underneath the flight of the ball and almost catch it and fall backwards and be quite comfortable doing that. They'd generally be the ones that would lead with their foot rather than their head when they're batting. So that's one thing we do know. But going back to your first questions, go through them yourselves. Wolf, have a go and then report back, because as much as we can advise you from afar, you'll be able to inform us of what you've tried and what worked for you.
And I guess whatever your preference, there's going to be situations that you get into that it's not going to be in the way that you want it to be. And you're going to have to sort of fall back to the other method. And so being able to do all of them, or have at least practiced all of them, is a good way to know that at least even in your non-preference way of doing it, if you do find yourself in that situation, you know that it's something that you've practiced a bit and you can back yourself to make the necessary adjustments if you need to.
You owe it to your teammates and the bowler, don't you, to be able to work, yes, in your preference, I prefer to have it here, but actually to be catch the balls that are coming at different angles as well. You know, I'm not sure that one's going to wash in a debrief, is it? Oh, actually, I don't like the ball over there, so I didn't go for it. You know, it's not going to happen. You're going to get a fairly short shrift from a lot of people, aren't you, in that meeting? So, you know, you have to practice them, and you'll find out your preference. But please, you know, do that extreme practice where you are, you know, working really uncomfortably. And a way of doing that as well, going back to a previous thing we talked about, is actually having a occlusion at some stage during the ball's flight. So you might be, and we've seen England do this, where they have a bit of fun with each other, they put up some soft balls up into the air, and actually the person behind them in the queue covers the eyes, so then they have to locate the ball and then go to that area. Again, that's getting you used to not seeing the ball all the way in ball flight, and then having to adjust to a later stimulus, which is always good practice. So, you know, have a go at that as well and see if you can catch a ball differently but still be a very good catcher.
I see, one thing that's helped a lot, Lavers, with the guys I work with high catching, is using a softer ball with a Skyr bat, and you don't get the sound of the... You don't get the noise of the ball hitting the bat, and that makes it a bit more difficult for people to make their adjustments. Have you found that?
Okay, that's quite interesting actually. So I guess there's an element of hearing the ball off the bat and interpreting that sound into quality of contact, and then subsequently kind of height or speed or distance. But yeah, with the Skyr and with a different type of ball, that's probably a little bit more confusing, and it puts a little bit more pressure on them.
You just get that dull sort of bump instead of the crack.
Yeah, I guess feedback as a fielder is always really important, whether the ball's in the air or on the floor, isn't it? But that sound, imagine if you're on the cover boundary sweeping, you can identify a ball you're going to charge down immediately, or a ball or you're going to kind of you jog in and pick up because of the sound you receive. So that's quite a clever way to do it. I actually think that the point you made previously about encouraging Wolf in this case, but people generally to push themselves away from their strengths, as well as kind of trying to identify which option they do prefer, is really important. That's a mistake I think I used to make, really, is when coaching, I used to give people all the time their preferred method of receiving information, whether that was through written down information or video feedback or conversation or whatever it was. But kind of looking back on that, I started to realize that I was giving people the what they wanted all the time, and then when they left and they were going to get put in a county second 11 game or an academy game or whatever it might be, or a club game, and they were receiving information in the same way as everyone else in the team, then they had to adapt. So I think that being outside your comfort zone in the way that you either challenge your skills or challenge the way you take information is really, really important part of it.
Next question is from Brendan, and Brendan says, a 15-year-old boy I work with has recently returned from a trip to Australia. He's in the UK, Brendan. Whilst there, he visited a local coach who suggested he angle his approach to maximise his Chinaman deliveries. Whilst he understands how this contributes to his spin, he's finding it challenging to get any sort of control. His approach is very acute, as is his pivot. Previously, he had a straight approach. What feedback can you give?
Lavers, do you want to crack this
first? I mean, it's obviously anything that gets technical and is individual to a person is a little bit tricky. But it would be great to see some video footage. And we always say if you can send anything in, then do so, because that would be great to have a look at it. Obviously, it sounds like there's quite a significant change in his approach to the crease. And the first thing we'd ask is why we required that change. So what wasn't working for you in the first place that you felt you needed to change to try and make it work a little bit better? You've obviously gone from a straight run up here to something that's pretty angled. And because of that, there's a big change of direction at the crease, which immediately is going to mean that the usual direction that your arms, your feet, your hips, your shoulders, etc. are pointing has now been changed. You'll probably find that it's putting you into more of a side-on position, which may have its benefits for you as a spinner. But just putting you on a different angle of run-up is something that needs probably a little bit more follow-up work just to try and make any further adjustments to your position. I would imagine in terms of control, there's probably going to be a bit of a balance issue. No doubt your feet are probably angled across towards the slips if you're bowling left arm over the wicket a little bit more than they would normally be, so slightly more closed off. And that could cause that classic fall away to the leg side, in this case, as a left arm bowler, which is again causing issues with balance, with control of the ball, as you've said. So It might be a case of finding a happy medium and thinking, what are the benefits I get from my straight run-up? What are the benefits I get from my angled run-up? Is there anything I can find where I'm at a point where I'm getting both opportunities, I'm getting both benefits that I'd be looking for? Or is there a point in between where I can get the boat mess best out of both without absolutely getting everything? Equally, we could look at, from that run-up, possibly trying to still retain a fairly straight jump. So running on the angle, but then trying to just redirect that jump a little bit so we redirect that body weight. But without seeing a video, it's going to be a little bit tricky, but it'd be interesting to see how an experimentation of effectively what would be a bit of a hybrid run-up of the two for you would go, where we can maybe have a little bit more balance and slightly better aligned in the feet, hips and shoulders, and as well as retaining what seems to give you a little bit more spin, which is the angle of the run-up.
The implication I get from the question, Gareth, in that it's pretty much just reported as is rather than making any particular comment, is that perhaps Brendan doesn't agree with the other coach. So that's an interesting thing. When a coach gives a piece of advice to a player and the player follows it and you disagree with it, where do you kind of go next is the question.
Well, you go to the player first in this case, because obviously it's not going to be easy for Brendan back in the UK to have really open lines of communication with a coach in Australia. So you go to the player first and foremost and get their version of it. You know, what caused the coach to go down there? It sounds to me, if I'm trying to put words into people's mouths, it's probably is that he started working with this lad. He was only over there for a little bit of time, that the kid said he wanted to spin his Chinaman more, and this guy gave him some advice about how he'd best go about it. And so I think you go to the player first. You say, well, what have you experienced so far? You know, is it something you want to persist with? What do you see the pros and cons are to it? How has it affected your accuracy? How has it affected your spin? And that's your starting point. And ultimately, your starting point to me should always be with the player. And then if you're interested in a couple of the responses that you get back from the player, then you can always go down the email route and contact the coach to get a little bit more clarity and maybe their perspective on it. So that would be my starting point. I mean, to me, if the angle is acute going in, then the angle is going to be acute going out, because you have to get off the pitch first and foremost. But also that follows pretty much the rules of biomechanics, you know, in terms of action reaction. So whatever you go into that angle with, you've got to come out of it as well. The tricky bit for that is that your release point has got to be absolutely spot on every time in order to be accurate, because as you can imagine, your forces and your momentum all going in one way, and then they have to go in the opposite way to get off of the pitch. And unless you time your release point and all your sequential movements absolutely spot on, then there is going to be a real negative effect on the accuracy. In terms of spin, I'm struggling to see how that's going to increase spin of the Chinaman. I should imagine it will help the ball to run on, whether that's perceived as spin or just angle, I'm not too sure, to a right-hander, and maybe beat the guy on the outside edge a little bit. But, you know, the starting point for me is always to come from a straight approach and then to adapt it to the individual accordingly from there, rather than having a generic let's come in on an angle, because that will increase spin. I think we should be going beyond those days. But as I said at the start of my answer, my first point of call would be to ask the individual who's doing this particular task what their experience has been so far, and get them to work out the way they want to go, rather than having a sort of confab over many thousands of miles between two coaches that don't know each other.
Yeah, and we are making quite a lot of assumptions there. And I guess really the ultimate indicator is, you know, you look at the outcomes and you say, okay, well, if it is as simple as when he has a straight run-up, he has more control but less spin, and when he has a curved run up he has more deviation but less control, then that's a problem that needs to be solved. But the outcomes is really where you're looking first, aren't you, and saying, okay, what's happening here? And that's, if you start from there, then you're not going to go far wrong, are you?
Biomechanically, as long as the hips and shoulders are able to rotate, there's no reason why a straight approach couldn't give this kid the same amount of spin as an end result. There's no reason. However, we do know that bodies are organized in slightly different ways from each other, and some spinners do prefer to have a slight angle on their approach into the crease. However, when they are, so I think about somebody like a Graham Swan bowling around the wicket to a left-handed batter, which he was incredibly good at. His strike rates were amazing. His run-up was slightly angled, so he'd end up bowling it from slightly wide on the crease, but was still able to get the outcome that you're talking about, which was his dip, his drift and his spin, which brought LBW into play, which is one of his main dismissals, actually, once DRS came in against left-handed spin. Left-handed batters. So, you know, you can achieve it in a couple of ways, but just, it might even be worthwhile having a look at somebody like Paul Adams, that was the last real Chinaman bowler to do anything of great note. Having a look at his angles when he bowled really well against England. I think it was in the early 2000s. Have a look at some of his angles, and I don't recall him coming in on a huge amount of angle to be able to bowl both his Chinaman, which was his better delivery of the two, and his orthodox spinner as well. So have a look at him and do some compare and contrast. Always good to have a look at the best and work your way out from there. So that would be one of my first ports of call.
It's time for the soapbox. And that is 60 seconds on the clock and an uninterrupted chat from one of the members of the team. And this week, it's Sam Lavery. Over to you, Lavers.
Well, my soapbox today is about cricket mats, and everyone's had the traditional dark green cricket mat, or sometimes blue, I think, they have the rubber on the back and they roll up really nicely, and they do a pretty good job, and most cricket clubs have probably had the same ones for 10 years, 15 years, however long it would be. We've just looked to try and get four new ones, and we astonishingly have found that the existing mats that we've used with the rubber on the back that roll up nicely and don't crinkle have gone out of business. So unfortunately, we're looking for other options, and it seems that the only other option we can get now is something with a PVC backing. Now, that actually doesn't roll as well. It needs to go onto a spindle type of thing, and it can get lots of crinkles in the mat. So unfortunately, because they were so good at their business, people's mats weren't dying. We're out of luck with the good ones. So whoever wants to do it, get out there, make some new cricket mats with a rubber mat and with a rubber backing, and get us four sent down to PGS, please.
Here we go. And that is all we've got time for on the show this week. There is one more thing we need to do before we finish up, and that is decide on the winner of this week's competition. We had two questions sent in, one from Wolf about high catches and one from Brendan about an angled run-up for a Chinaman bowler. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Wolf this week. Another great question from Wolf, and hopefully within the courses somewhere you'll find something that helps you to get the answers.
So congratulations, Wolf. Now I know, Wolf, that you're not always interested in picking up a course, so if there's something else possibly we could do for you, then we're always open to ideas. Get in touch. And if someone was listening to this show and they decided they want to send in their question and win the prize, the online coaching course, how could they get in touch with us?
You can give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
You can also get us through social media. Facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy is where we hang out most of the time, but you can also find us on Twitter @PitchVisionAcad. You can listen to the show every week if you want to as well. That is simple to do. Just go into your favourite podcast app on your phone or your tablet or your computer and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. Click or tap on the subscribe button and you'll get the show delivered to you every Friday for nothing. And if you want to get the show notes or find out more about the show, download the show, stream it through the web, and you can do that easily as well by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link, and you'll get all the show notes going right back to the beginning. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, bye.
Cheers, guys.